This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. In response to the state of things in this nation, Cincinnati Public Schools may be the first district in Ohio to adopt what it calls an anti-racism policy. It focuses on how racism affects its black students and staff. The draft policy aims to eliminate all forms of racism from the district. CPS already has an equity policy, striving to promote inclusion, but the new anti-racism policy would focus specifically on fighting racism against black students and staff. So joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the policy is Cincinnati Public Schools Assistant General Counsel Stephanie Scott. Stephanie, welcome to our program.
Hello, how are you today?
We're doing well. Thank you for being with us. And we also have with us Board of Education member Mike Morosky. Mike, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be back on the program.
Well, we're glad you could take some time out of your long walks to explain this new policy with us. We do appreciate it. And if you're listening and you want to join this conversation, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email your questions or comments to talk at wvxu.org. Well, Mike, let's just start with a simple question. What brought this on?
So a number of things sort of convulging at once. On June 10th, I assigned our general counsel, Dan Hoying, to investigate anti-racism policies in the district. And thankfully, we had recently hired Assistant General Counsel Stephanie Scott, who has really behind this and equity. And she obviously can talk about that. But for me, as you may know, and I'm not sure all the listeners do, in my day job, I work on health policy for black maternal health, infant mortality explicitly. When we talk infant mortality, we're talking a black infant mortality problem. And so a lot of what I've done the past going on 3 years is really digging into policies that seek to dismantle historic systems of racism. And in so doing, I've undergone my own racial equity journey and gone through pretty intensive implicit bias training the past 2 years, which is really made me see things differently. I've always been very keenly aware of racism and tried to combat, not quite on a systemic level. I've grown to see it. When George Floyd was murdered by the police and when the country rightfully went up in arms and hopefully will stay up in arms so that change will happen, I was motivated to see if the district would be amenable to having an explicit anti-racism policy. And then one last thing, and I'll finish. That could sort of bolster and hold up our strategic plan's stated goal of reducing racial disparities in academic performance, discipline rates, identification of disabilities, et cetera. So I felt it important to call that out. My colleagues feel it's important as well, and the superintendent. And so that's kind of how we got here.
Mike, you've called racism an educational crisis. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means?
There is not an institution or system in this country where anybody outperforms white or underperforms black. Nowhere. And that is a sickness that's embedded in our culture. And when I say it's an educational crisis, what I mean by that is that, you know, until we state this and until we design metrics that say we are not going to accept that there are more black boys in detention because that's the way it's always been, and look at ourselves and look at our own racism in our own systems, it's never going to change. And it's a crisis because at present, we have more black people locked up than we did during slavery. And you know, this sort of racism and this school-to-prison pipeline and this sort of holding an entire group of people back begins in schools. And while we may not have created these systems, they're the systems we've inherited, and I believe it's incumbent upon us to dismantle them.
And we're talking about a draft policy proposal for Cincinnati Public Schools called the anti-racism policy currently. And Mike, one more question for you before we join our other guest who's with us today, Stephanie Scott, the Assistant General Counsel for the school district. Mike, this is called an anti-racism policy. And, you know, the reaction that you're giving to the death of George Floyd and the civil unrest that has emerged all across the country, including here in Cincinnati, has prompted a lot of people, individuals, organizations, to look internally about their own actions or inaction as it relates to race. And the term anti-racist and anti-racism has gained popularity in everyday vernacular. But I'm wondering if you can help define it for us.
So for me, and what I've learned from people who are much better versed in this than I am, and certainly from all the women I work with, all of whom are Black women, and the training I've gone through, the way I've come to understand anti-racism is, it's one thing to say I'm not a racist. That's good, of course. But being anti-racist seems to indicate and note some, you're taking some form of action, again, to dismantle these systems. Because to say, as an individual, I do not treat Black people poorly, again, that's good. But it doesn't necessarily change the systems, again, that are 400, they've had 400 years to take root. And no hashtag and no protest and no, I'm declaration of being woke is going to change any of that. We need to look at what are our actions. I'm going to give a tangible example, if I may.
Sure.
And that is a white parent who's teaching their kid to not be racist, but sends them to an exclusive school and not the neighborhood school, because the neighborhood school has a lot of Black children in it. They want to live in the urban core, but they're not willing to send their white child to that school. It is hard to say you're anti-racist or teaching anti-racism. You are not racist, and that's good. Again, not casting shade, that's good. But I think there is a fundamental difference in that anti-racist behavior and just not being a jerk to Black people.
I'm going to come back to that, because I do want to ask some more about that perspective you just offered about white families and urban schools. But we're also joined now by Cincinnati Public Schools Assistant General Counsel Stephanie Scott. And Stephanie, as we noted at the intro of this segment, the school district already has an equity policy, and that policy does strive to promote inclusion. Can you explain the differences legally that this proposed anti-racism policy would address that perhaps that equity policy does not?
Well, I guess the nuance is, I don't necessarily know if it's a legal nuance, but basically with an equity policy, you're achieving to provide equity for all different types of protected classes, whether that be race, gender, you know, sexual orientation, physical ability and things of that nature. What this anti-racism policy, as Mike has kind of already alluded to, is specifically calling out racism. And then in the anti-racism form, as he said, is a proactive approach in doing that. So that's really kind of the nuance in that. I don't necessarily know if it's a legal one. It's just more of being having a louder voice in this particular area of equity.
So as you work on crafting this policy, because I guess it falls on the General Counsel Office to draft these policies that are then voted on after public consideration and discussion at the level of the board, what is it that you're vetting exactly to ensure that it's, you know, constitutional, that it's appropriate?
Well, the initial, you know, even with the equity policy and the anti-racism policy are already kind of rooted within our, you know, equal protection laws under our Constitution. And so really what the policies are aiming to do, again, is to give some kind of meat or some action towards actually accomplishing those goals. And so when we talk about, you know, dismantling these systems, there needs to be action steps behind them. So, of course, our office is involved because we're attached to the policy committee, which Mike chairs. And so, as you said, we are constantly, reviewing the district's policies and amending them and presenting new ones such as this. And so we kind of always have that legal eye to make sure that it's not discriminatory in nature to anyone. But it really was about just looking for guidance, across the country, which actually there aren't many anti-racism policies in place yet, but even organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center kind of task school leaders with the responsibility of kind of maintaining healthy school climates, and part of those best practices is having policies and procedures in place to counter hate and bias. And so this kind of falls right into line with that.
And you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking about the proposed anti-racism policy at Cincinnati Public Schools. We're joined by Board of Education member Mike Morosky and the district's Assistant General Counsel, Stephanie Scott. Mike, I want to read part of the draft policy as it stands currently. Quote, "In this district, there are significant disparities between racial groups in student academic performance, achievement, and participation in academic programs. These include disparities in discipline rates, economic advantages, students with disabilities identification, advanced placement, gifted and enrichment services, athletics, arts, and extracurricular activities. So, Mike, is the suggestion here, or are the facts here, that those disparities are related to racism?
That's certainly the implication. And, you know, I would welcome anybody to counter that and take the position that black people are somehow less capable of achieving the same grades and success that white people are. And I could go back and forth with them all day and help them realize they are wrong. So yes, the implication is that these are the results of deeply embedded systems of racism at play that right off the bat, and whether people realize it or not, and I feel like most folks, I'm willing to assume positive intent, that most people don't even realize their implicit biases exist. It's about 90% of our brains, and we can't even access those. And so they're there. I have them. I have plenty of them. The journey really begins with pointing the finger at oneself. I've been pointing the finger at myself for about 2 years intensely now. And, you know, in the policy, it also talks about mandated implicit bias training, which, to Ms. Scott's point, we're doing, but this codifies it. And that's why policy, in my opinion, as policy chair, is important, because it sets the stage for years to come. And so, yeah, I do believe that those systems of racism are what create those disparities you just read. And one thing of note, too, is, so I work on social determinants of health in my day job. And there are also social determinants of education, right? And so a student may be bringing in something, you know, from their neighborhood, or a trauma from their home, or a trauma from the street they live on, et cetera, to the classroom and interact with an adult. The adult will respond in an appropriate way, but it is received in a different way by the young person because of this trauma. And then that situation can blow up, and it ends up with a student, say, in alternative suspension or expulsion program, when if we're able to stop and look at our behaviors and look at the behaviors of the young people, we can mitigate a lot of these things. And so it's not as much a all of these people are bad, but we're all part of this system. And you can't see your way out of a circle you're stuck in. And So it's incumbent upon us as leaders of the district to help people see that circle of racism that sort of governs everything we do.
We're going to continue this conversation about Cincinnati Public Schools' proposed anti-racism policy just ahead. We'll also get to some phone calls at 513-419-7100, or email your thoughts to talk@wvxu.org. A little later in our program, students will join us to talk about their experiences with racism and inequality. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our discussion about an anti-racism policy at Cincinnati Public Schools. We're joined on the phone by Cincinnati Public Schools Assistant General Counsel Stephanie Scott. Stephanie, thank you for staying with us.
Yes.
And Board of Education member Mike Morosky. Mike, thanks to you as well.
No problem. Great to be here.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We'll take some phone calls now. Jason is on the line. Hi, Jason. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an implant to Cincinnati. I came here about 10 years ago, and I'm a part-time gig worker, Uber and Lyft driver. And the thing I thought is that this is a great program, but I noticed that when I'm driving, when I'm communicating, the first thing that people ask me is, hey, where'd you go to school? I would always answer, my college, like Temple University, but they would immediately say, oh, no, would you go to high school? And I'm just wondering, like, is this something that other people experience, especially is it peculiar as an implant to a city? And is this ingrained in kind of a narrative that builds to just kind of racism? Because it's a way that I find that people sum up your economic status, who you are, What you're doing, what your life is. And it's so prevalent in this city versus other places I've lived in the country.
Jason, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. It's certainly not unusual. I think there's quite a stereotype that Cincinnatians will often ask where you went to school, and they mean high school, and it is a way to gain some background to that. Well, let me ask either of you, do you see anything inherently racist in that question?
I mean, I do in some ways. Yeah, and I'm actually a native of Cincinnati. I grew up in northern Cincinnati in Forest Park, and so I'm very familiar with what the caller was referencing, and I hear that so often from other people and friends and so on who have moved to the city. And I do feel, I don't think it's intentional form in that way, but I do feel like it's a way that the caller indicated that people, based on which high school that you went to, people do make some predeterminations or are in some ways, trying to, size one up. It's similar to what people do when they ask what you do. You know, they kind of make those same assumptions and so on and so forth. And me, myself, being an African-American woman, a lot of times when I, tell people that I'm a lawyer, I get a surprise response. And so, but I may have a white counterpart who says the same thing, and it's like a norm. So I think, again, it's just kind of one of those things that are inherent in our society right now. So it requires us to be active in, similar to an anti-racism policy, is kind of being active and trying to change those things. So I know for myself personally now, when people ask me that question, I tell them where I went to college intentionally. I know what they want to know, but I give them another piece of information.
Mike, did you want to weigh in on that as well?
I would just second everything Ms. Scott said. I'm from Atlanta. I've lived here more than half my life, so I'm used to the question at this point. But I do feel, that whatever its original intent, it has become a way for people to size you up and assume many things about you very, very quickly without having to get to know you. And to the caller's point, I do think that, there's some racism, perhaps, yes, but I do think the question is loaded with implicit and explicit bias of all kinds.
Let's go now to Sal. Hi, Sal. What's your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
I'm curious, in the draft anti-racist policy, if there's anything addressing the needs of the Latinx immigrant population.
Sal, thanks so much for the question. We'll hang up and allow Stephanie an opportunity to answer that. Stephanie, Sal's question was about the Latinx population within Cincinnati public schools and whether this anti-racism policy would apply to them.
Well, yes, the anti-racism policy would apply to any marginalized class of, in our society, and our, as it presents itself in our school district. And so even though kind of the precipice of us drafting this is based on some of the challenges that Black Americans have been experiencing and so on and so forth, the Black race is the most marginalized race in our society. And specifically in Cincinnati public schools, it is the largest segment of our student body. So when we're trying to hear responses and voices and, getting feedback and trying to draft this in a way that would be responsive to those students, of course, Black students are going to have the largest voice because they do represent the largest part of our student population. But definitely, just like with anything that happens on the national level, when you address anything but race, it's going to trickle down and affect any type of other races as well as any other marginalized class, in our society.
Mike, the group that was put together to analyze this anti-racism policy, I understand that is there still a meeting scheduled for tomorrow?
So tomorrow is the meeting of the policy committee at 3:30 p.m., which anyone can access on all of my social media outlets. But the task force that was organized, really, okay. Ms. Scott would be the best person to ask about the task force.
Is there...
Yeah, actually, that group met on Tuesday.
Okay.
They met a couple of days ago.
Awesome. Okay, so, Mike, you also hosted a meeting earlier in the summer to discuss the anti-racism policy, and you did open it up for comments. We've got some sound from that meeting. This is reaction from a Cincinnati public school student. His name is Youssef. Do we have that, Josh? It's a student named Youssef, and we'll have some sound from another participant at that meeting as well. Here's Youssef.
The current non-discrimination policy, that is 2255 on the CPS policies, already includes a culturally relevant curriculum, equal access to extracurricular activities, and tutoring. Those are just words. A statewide policy, the PBS that I just mentioned, already calls for evidence-based restorative justice policy. The issue with this current anti-racist policy, with the same policies that we already have and the previous ones, is that they've never been implemented, which is the exact same thing that we see in this anti-racism policy. There's no implementation plan. There's no implementation plan for restorative justice policy. There's no implementation plan for what happens if a teacher is racist. Implementation plan for how we will enforce any of these policies. They currently exist. We have all of these policies. The issue is that nobody enforces them. Like, I've had an administrator literally ask me if I was racist to white people after I reported someone for being homophobic. Like, that is the current situation of our schools. Those are the administrators. Those are the people who will be enforcing said rules.
And that was a Cincinnati Public School student named Youssef speaking earlier this summer at a meeting hosted by board member Mike Morosky. Mike, you hear the frustration from that student there that these types of issues have been sought to be addressed before, and he seemed unhappy with the implementation. What's your response to that?
So Youssef reached out to me. He's an extremely active student. He has been a part of a number of really great sort of activities, movements, et cetera, to push the district forward. And I invited Youssef to join our task force and be a part of the solution. And my response to him would be and has been, and that was, just of note, that was at a policy committee meeting, not a meeting that I hosted. I chaired it, but it was an official policy committee meeting of the public school district. So it was the district's meeting that I just happened to chair. So it's a point of clarification. But my response to Youssef would be, he's not wrong. We have a racism problem, and that's what this is calling out. And what I would say is, you know, while we do have all these other policies, this one does have tangible items in it that will be enacted after it is implemented. So it's not even passed yet. It was assigned June 10th. It had its first reading July 10th. We are into September. Geez, this is going to be a months-long process because what we want to be different here is we want this to be the community's policy. And to Youssef's point, if it's not the community's policy, then there really isn't as much ability for people to hold our feet to the fire to say, hey, you said you would do this. We've put this policy on our website. To the best of my knowledge, it's the first time people can leave feedback directly on the site because we think it's that important. And so I take his criticism. I lean into it. I sit with it. I accept it. We do have to have actionable steps because to just say we have an equity policy, that's nice. But what have we done? Now, we can say some things we've done, but if we have an anti-racism policy, we need to be able to show a market improvement in the racial disparity in all of those items, again, that you read earlier, academic achievement, identification of disability, et cetera.
And here's some more reaction from that meeting earlier this summer. This is Dr. Moffitt.
What is the process already in place for addressing people that have exposed racism? What is the procedure? Should they go to their police department? What is the procedure already about reporting issues of race?
And Stephanie, perhaps that's a question for you. So while this anti-racism policy is discussed and the draft is reviewed, what are the tools at folks' disposal should they experience something like this in the meantime?
And the district has a policy in place. It's our non-discrimination, access to equal education opportunity policy, along with kind of our anti-harassment policy, which there is a mechanism already in place for people to report racism in that regard. And so there's a hotline number that they can call, and that's always been in existence. But similarly to Youssef's point, sometimes people just aren't aware, or maybe it's not really promoted in that way. So one of the main things in this policy is we actually call out this number and call out a procedure to communicate what it actually is and how people can report these type of instances. So we took that feedback and we've actually already implemented that into the draft that the community can currently respond to. So it's the district harassment hotline number, which is 363-0111. And so they can start there. If they don't feel comfortable doing that, they can also reach out to our general counsel's office directly, or they can also reach out to the authority in their school. So there's several procedures in place, but this hotline is the best one if they want to keep their anonymity in the process.
I think we got some time for another phone call. Let's go to the line now. We have Barb. Hi, Barb. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I just want to reiterate Youssef's question, which is, it's great about the hotline. It's great to report. What are the actionable steps if someone is doing something wrong in the system? because otherwise this is just bells and whistles and repeats. Thank you.
Barb, thanks for the call. Is there a response to that, Stephanie?
Sure. I mean, right now, just because we have an anti-racism policy, again, doesn't mean that we haven't been responding to discriminatory and racist acts. So it would follow our normal chain of disciplinary process. And so once someone reports a problem, it's actually our department's, our office job to go out and we investigate those. And if we do find people, staff members or, has done this, we follow our normal discipline processes. And then if it's a situation where it's a student among students, again, that will follow similarly disciplinary actions that are in the school. But what this policy is actually calling to include in that process is kind of restorative measures, allowing an opportunity for the offender as well to be educated in the process.
And we're talking with Cincinnati Board of Education member Mike Morosky and the district's assistant general counsel, Stephanie Scott. Mike, what's next for this?
So what's next is we will meet tomorrow, 3:30 p.m. Ms. Scott will give us an update on what the task force had to say. I will then report that out at our next board meeting and get more input from the board. And we'll keep going through a series of this vetting to get to where it needs to be. And then ultimately, I'm hesitant to give any timeline because in the world of policy, timelines are fairly meaningless. And especially if you want the policy to be robust and, again, owned by the community, it's going to take time. So, but I will, in spite of that caveat, say, ideally by late winter, we would be able to vote on it as a district. Once it's voted on and approved, which I have great hope that it will, because, again, my colleagues are all supportive of this. My only job is helping shoulder this through the process because, again, the communities and Stephanie created the first draft. I'm just carrying it through. When it's finished, what happens typically with a policy, once it's passed, is a set of procedures which are administrative in nature accompany it. So a lot of what the last caller brought up and what Yusuf consistently reminds us of, which hopefully he's listening and knows we are grateful for that, the procedures then would give building administrators, et cetera, sort of guidelines on here is what you do. Here's this policy. In the policy, there are tangible things that would have to happen, signage, et cetera, but then the procedures would speak to here is how we move forward. Here are the restorative practices that we engage in when it happens, because at the end of the day, this was not intended to be punitive. I was a dean of students, as I think you know, and I can tell you with great certainty that punitive action doesn't result in the best results. We need to use these as opportunities to teach young people this is why what you said was wrong, and to try to make a kinder, more just society. And again, that goes for everyone in our buildings.
That's Cincinnati Board of Education member Mike Morosky. We've also been joined by Cincinnati Public Schools Assistant General Counsel Stephanie Scott. Mike, Stephanie, thanks so much for the time you gave us today.
Thank you. And again, thank you for also letting your listeners know that they can go onto our website. They'll provide that feedback. I know you all have a link, but we definitely would encourage the community to continue to go out there, look at the draft that's in place, and provide that feedback so we can incorporate as much as we can into the finished version.
We do have a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.